Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, our good martini actually comes from day one of the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship. If anyone had Baylor or Iowa State going far in their bracket, better luck next year. Both of the number one seeds won quite handily, Villanova and Kentucky. Two more number one seeds will play today. The Kentucky team, of course, is undefeated and is the prohibitive favorite to win the national championship. And they handled Hampton quite easily. But Kentucky looked pretty sloppy in the early going. They ultimately had a 19-point lead at halftime, but it was pretty clear from Kentucky coach John Calipari going into halftime that he thought his team came out rusty, overlooking Hampton a little bit, thinking they were basically entitled to this victory as a number one seed against a number 16. And his analogy to his frustration with his team in the early going should make conservatives pretty happy.
I keep saying it's not communism. You got to perform. You go in there and don't perform, I'm not playing you.
So, Jim, after those kids at UC Irvine tried to ban the flag, I really like the attitude from Coach Cal here.
I might say just an indicator of just how far these social justice warriors and the lefty progressivism on college campuses can get when the coach needs to mention this to his players. Apparently, they didn't think it was communism and that there would be a certain amount of leveling of the playing field or playing court, I suppose. I suppose it's just a matter of time before the lefties get on the idea that somehow sports, with its achievement-oriented mentality, is somehow unfair and discriminatory of those who are less good at sports. So there should be some sort of redistribution of the points, some sort of minimum playing time for untalented players so they don't feel too embarrassed by the fact that they're not on the court. If you're really great at dunking the basketball, there should be some sort of weight around your ankle to kind of weigh you down because, really, the most successful 1% in this sport really are ruining it for everyone else. The other 99% feel very bad. Why should Michael Jordan be so much better than everyone else? It's just not fair, Greg. So I salute John Calipari, former UMass coach, no less, to stand up and say, hey, ultimately, when he says, this is basketball is not communism, you know what else isn't communism? Life. Right? I mean, that's the only problem with communism. Is if the entire world was not based on being able to get things done and achievement and not about feelings and self-esteem, it would work. But unfortunately, human nature being what it is, we tend to do a lot better when there's really great incentives to do our best. And so for whatever else you think of Calipari, I salute him for doing his part to keep communism out of basketball.
Excellent, excellent. I think my wife thinks I'm slowly going crazy because my oldest daughter, who's 2.5, loves the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse on the Disney Channel. And every once in a while, they'll have a show where there's a competition involved. And I'm like, all right, let's see who wins this competition. And invariably, they find a way that it ends in a tie and everybody gets a ribbon. And it just drives me crazy. So
Goofy had that. Your eyes, ref.
Well, I'm very familiar with Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, Greg. And yes, there's a little bit of that, I tell my sons, no, in reality, Donald would have won, and he would have been entitled to a little bit of trash talk. Not that anyone could understand it.
No. He definitely trash talks the most on there anyway. All right, on to the bad martini now. And President Obama was in Cleveland earlier this week saying a number of amazing things. He told us that if you watch Fox compared to MSNBC, you'll get a different idea of what's going on in the world. I think most of us would probably agree with that. He also said Obamacare is doing far better than even he imagined it would. Even that's not the bad martini. The bad martini is this, because apparently he's still not happy with how much power he's collected for himself in Washington.
In Australia and some other countries, there's mandatory voting. It would be transformative if everybody voted. That would counteract money more than anything. If everybody voted, then it would completely change the political map in this country. Because the people who tend not to vote are young, they're lower income, they're skewed more heavily towards immigrant groups and minority groups.
Forcing people to vote, that spells freedom to me. And of course, he thinks it spells victory for Democrats across the board.
We've been told for a very long time that he's a very smart guy. And I'm not increasingly unconvinced of this. And there are two good reasons. One being, so here's a constitutional law professor kind of wishing he had the power to make people vote. from the very beginning, there's always been this attitude of, you know what, if you don't want to vote, you don't have to vote. Because, you know, there's an entire great South Park episode using inappropriate terms that basically said, what do you do when you have two really bad options, right? Now, I understand in Nevada, they have the ballot the option of none of the above. So if you're going to mandate everyone voting, you got to at the very least, you're like, this is basically forcing people to approve one of the options when they, by their act of non-voting. I mean, that is effectively a say, all right, I'm fine with the status quo. I am not bothered by enough by what's going on to show up and vote. And then two separate points, he says money would counteract money. Oh, no, no, no. Let's face it. How many high information non-voters do you think are out there, Greg?
Not too many.
Right. I mean, if you don't vote, you don't care. Right. You. So if it really gets to the point where we're going to put you in jail if you don't vote, or we're going to fine you or something like that, then the people will vote simply because they have to. But it's not like they're suddenly going to research the issues. It's not like they're suddenly going to become, you know, active, engaged citizens or something. They're going to make their decision based upon what they know, which is not very much. And they might as well just be randomly selecting. They'll do it probably based on what TV ads they see. So if anything, it will make money even more important for this. And what's more, it'll make campaigns, you'll have to spend enormous sums of money who don't care and don't know much about anything. All right, this is actually just spending an enormous amount of money to influence people who have already indicated they don't care and they don't want to care. But what's even more, Obama seems to think, I sometimes use this example of why some places I don't vote. Back when I lived in Washington, D.C., Greg, there was a school board election. I generally knew who was running for mayor and the city council. I didn't really follow, didn't have kids yet, didn't follow the school board elections. And I see five names in front of me, and I don't recognize any of them. And then I think, wait a minute, okay, I've seen that name on a sign near my house. And I was going to mark the ballot. It suddenly dawned on me, Greg, this person could be an axe murderer for all I know. The only criteria, this person, is they managed to put a sign near my house. So I'm going to give them my vote and potentially put them on the school board. Now, they could have a plan to put all kids into Soylent Green, okay? It could be absolutely terrible. But for some, you know, and so I realized, wait, I shouldn't vote. I don't know any of these candidates. I don't know if any of them are good or bad. I don't know if I agree with them or disagree with them. America is not strengthened by ignorant voting. And Obama's idea that somehow by requiring people to vote, it's going to make them get better informed. It's going to make them think about these things more seriously and deeply. Is just flat out wrong. It's just not going to work that way. And he just kind of spends enough time in his bubble that there's no one around him to say, yeah, Mr. President, it doesn't work that way. No. And that's why he's blurting ideas like this one out there.
Jim, it's been a long, difficult week. Stories like what the president's doing and other things that we're seeing, frustrations from Congress and our culture. It's just wearing and grinding on the American people. And fortunately, one of the leading presidential candidates has a solution.
I have decided we really need camps for adults. And we need the kind of camps that you all run. I mean, really, where, you know, none of the serious stuff, none of the, you know, life challenge stuff, more fun. I think we have a huge fun deficit in America. And we need to figure out how to fill that fun deficit, certainly for our kids, but also for the rest of us. You know, we need some reminder about life skills from time to time, maybe some enrichment, certainly some time outdoors, maybe actually spending time with people that we didn't know before.
When I think fun, Jim, I think Hillary.
Welcome to Fun Camp. So I have so many directions I can go with this, Greg. I will quote the Morning Jolt and say, I haven't seen a Democratic presidential candidate this enthusiastic about camp since FDR. Google that if you need to. The second one for the listeners is, so we can now officially say that she wants to round people up and put them in camps. It's not black helicopter talk and all that stuff. The third or fourth thing, one, so first of all, we should emphasize, this is a paid speech she's giving yesterday, right? She's pretty openly running for president, but she's still getting six-figure sums to come and speak to groups. And, you know, a lot of us have said this seems like legalized bribery. This seems like greedy and excessive. It seems really ridiculous when she goes to, say, a public university, takes a six-figure check, and then talks about the high cost of rising tuition. The ironies abound. The ridiculousness abounds. And she goes and gives this speech. But here's the other. We've also kind of wondered, like, you know, if you give Hillary a six-figure check, whether you're Goldman Sachs or somebody else, does she then become more sympathetic to your organization and your viewpoint? And I think we can simply say the answer is crystal clear, yes, because she's being paid by the American Camp Association, or the Camp Association of New York and New Jersey, I think it was. And now she's calling for national camps. If the national corn growers say, well, everyone in America should eat corn, right? I mean, she will show up and say whatever you want her to say. And you hear this and you're saying, I can't believe this person is seriously thinking of running for president, because it's such a transparent about all this stuff. And then her idea that we have a fund deficit in this country. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't worry me as much as the budget deficit, Mrs. Clinton, but all right, fine. And actually, there is, you know, give her a small bit of credit. Yes, we do have a fund deficit. You know why? Because the country's been depressed since late 2008. And that's not all on President Obama, though a lot of it is. But look, the economy just, you know, crashed on the rocks in you know, with Lehman Brothers and the Wall Street meltdown, and the Great Recession began then. And we've actually had, you know, worse wages during the quote-unquote recovery than we have during then. Yes, we are having a fund deficit because we're depressed, because we've been through really hard times. And with what's coming out of Washington right now, we see no indication it's getting any better. You know who's having fun? Bill Clinton's having fun, going off to his special island. But I guess even then, he's got to leave the country to enjoy himself the way he likes. So we end up in a situation where her idea, her solution to this, is not say, hey, let's have a big economic boom, right? Remember the 80s? Remember how great that, you know, things were up back then? Remember, you know, even the late 90s, the dot-com boom? Those were really good times in America. No, no, we need camps, Greg.
If you haven't,
I'm getting the top bunk.
If you haven't seen The Morning Jolt yet, you should certainly read it every weekday. But especially today, the picture, the cartoon Jim has in conjunction with how fun the 1980s are, is absolutely classic. Every thing you remember and love about the 80s is pretty much included in that cartoon, in addition, of course, to Jim's outstanding writing. So if you love the 80s or really want to know why we love the 80s, check out The Jolt today. So, Jim, on that fun note, enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone.